from Hollywood, it's rated LGBT Radio, starring your host, Rob Watson!
Good evening. You are listening to Rated LGBT Radio. We are very pleased that you are on board with us tonight. And as always, we have an insightful, digging, and we hope dynamic show. We have a special guest on board tonight. Waiting on deck to come on is the one, the only Monica Roberts, who is the founding editor of Trans G Riot. And it is an award-winning blog. She also is an award-winning human rights activist, particularly in the area of transgender rights and for people of color. We cannot wait to talk to her and get her insights on the current political, cultural landscape, particularly transgender rights as they've been treated by the illustrious Trump administration. Speaking of the Trump administration, it's been quite a week there with the Michael Cohen hearings. Also, Trump in what some people think was a distraction, although what a distraction, goes to Vietnam to talk to North Korea, and that all falls apart. Not to mention he is trying to ride out the national emergency in his own mind of the wall, while he is also fighting to throw transgender members out of the military, as well as supposedly somewhere in his administration, they're looking to decriminalize homosexuality around the world. So a lot going on there. And for information on all of that, we are going to go to our completely in the know, finger on the pulse source, my wonderful co-host, Brody Levesque. And so without further ado, Brody, welcome to the show tonight.
Good evening, Rob, and good evening to all of our listeners. And it has been a week. It has been 2 weeks. Yesterday was the Cohen hearing, and there was probably things that happened in that hearing that we haven't seen since the days of Watergate. But as one observer put it, this one surpasses Watergate in severity. It boiled down to the Democrats getting answers on some things. I would have to give a big round of applause to New York Representative and Congresswoman Cortez for her questions, which I think will probably lead to more subpoenas from the House Oversight Committee. The Republicans went after Cohen. It was all attack. No questions about the president. It was all about credibility as far as they were concerned. Now, he did come to the hearing with baggage. But the thing was, is he came into the hearing and he brought a lot of evidence with him. So it wasn't just him sitting there talking about it. He had exhibits that went up on screen in the hearing at the time that he was testifying. The Republicans today reacted by asking the Justice Department to go after him and charge him with perjury again and lying to Congress because they honestly felt that he was lying again. At the end of the day, I think what we saw was a lot of things that were revealed about Donald Trump and his testimony that pretty much was already known factors, but here you had an insider, his personal lawyer, more or less confirming what I think the vast majority of everyone else had figured out. What we're waiting for now, quite obviously, is next week to see whether or not the Mueller report is going to be issued. There's still some questions about that in folks' minds. We don't honestly know. Now, in the afternoon session, while the House Oversight folks were talking to Mr. Cohen, some extremely highly decorated members of the military were also on the Hill testifying about the administration's transgender military service ban, including my friend, Lieutenant Commander Blake Brennan. Commander Brennan, of course, has been one of the folks from Sparta who's spoken out on this. It basically ended up with, you know, pointed questions from U.S. representatives and answers coming back that were pseudoscience and at the end of the day just completely wrong. When pressed, the Defense Department was like, if the person doesn't, you know, transition, then fine, they can come serve. But if they're already transitioned, no, that's not going to happen. And if they're basically in, out they go. So it is a ban. There's no way to categorize it any other way. And again, we can talk a little bit more with Monica about that because she's got her fingers on the pulse of that community. I found it disturbing that the Defense Department has taken a line that basically is tantamount to the same kind of nonsense that we heard during the hearings in 2010 and 2011 to remove Don't Ask, Don't Tell. It was the same kind of rhetoric and the same kind of nonsense, only in this case it was, you know, pseudoscience. And we're seeing a lot more of that erupt, and as Monica, I'm sure, will be happy to discuss, now we're seeing it in sports. Our friend of the show, Don Ennis, who's now the managing editor of OutSports magazine, put up a piece today, wrote talking about, you know, trans women will be unable to compete in certain, you know, challenges in certain sports, including weightlifting and dead weightlifting. And the pseudoscience that they use is that, oh, well, because they were born male, that they have this edge, which has been disproven. And I'll let Monica talk about our friendly tennis player because she ended up coming out as a TERF. I'll let Monica cover that one. Overall, it just has been one of those weeks where I think truly tracking politically, we are actually getting ready to see the beginning of the end. Most of the pundits that I've talked to, that I'm friends with, some of the columnists, my journalistic peers, the House Oversight hearing yesterday will be the predicate for future hearings that ultimately will end up at the House Judiciary Committee. I do think at this point we probably will see impeachment proceedings get started. However, there's no telling what direction that can go.
Yeah. So, Brody, I want to ask you a few questions. On, in the transgender ban hearings, did I understand you correctly? Because one of the things we talked to Shannon Mintner about on that was that the ban as written allows people who are transgender but out and fully identified who are serving to continue serving. Did I hear you correctly to say that that is not the case any longer, that the Justice Department is pushing for an outright ban of those individuals as well?
It seemed from what the Defense Department official was saying yesterday that the Defense Department is leaning in the direction of what would be considered a complete and total ban. Now, that means that trans members that are currently serving, like Commander Brennan, would, for example, when they get to the term of an enlistment contract or the term where they'd have to do, you know, extend their length of service, then it just wouldn't happen. It also would prevent anybody from enlisting or becoming, you know, transitioning. For example, this would affect any of the kids at the service academies, the Air Academy in Colorado Springs, the Military Academy at West Point, and, of course, the Naval Academy at Annapolis. So what you end up with is a situation and a scenario where you've got trans service members that basically would have to be don't ask, don't tell. And that's exactly the analogy that one congressman used. I think, you know, we've tried to stay away from using that analogy, but you know what? At the end of the day, it fits the best with the current administration and what we were hearing from that Defense Department official.
Right, right. And we will talk to Monica more about this. Two other, actually, non-LGBTQ related questions I wanted to ask you about. One is Trump in Vietnam and the complete unraveling of those discussions. What, in your estimation, happened there?
Honest with you, I don't think that Chairman Kim was willing to give up the nukes. I think that that was off the table, and I think that you know, at the end of the day, Donald Trump is a miserable negotiator. He's way in over his head. He's got absolutely no understanding of the complexities and nuances of diplomacy, let alone relationships with, in this case, you know, a hostile power that has been that way since, you know, the armistice was actually, you know, signed on the Korean War. So, I mean, at the end of the day, what you're left with is someone who had no business sitting in a room with Chairman Kim. And it was bound to happen.
Right.
There was too many observers that knew there was no way Trump was going to be able, because he just simply doesn't have the capacity, you know, quite frankly. And at the end of the day, I challenge whether he's got the intellect. I've said this before, and the Cohen hearing illustrated it as far as I'm concerned. The Trump Organization and the Trump family are an organized crime syndicate, and he's a mafia don, and he even sounds and talks like a mafia don. Now, they may not like my characterization of them, but at the end of the day, guess what, guys? You're one of the five New York families. You're number six.
Right. No, he definitely is. And, I mean, I think you could look at the whole talks with North Korea as just a vanity play. I mean, you know, he was smooched, he was kissed up to, and he just fell for it hook, line, and sinker. I mean, it's
well,
pretty ridiculous.
The problem is,
so, Brody,
it's a very dangerous vanity play. There.
Oh, incredibly. He is the last person in the world. He's the last position in the world that you want susceptible to flattery that he will bend over for. I mean, that is completely the wrong person to have in that position, which we already knew that, but, I mean, they're stating the obvious. But speaking of people who want to be in that position, I wanted to ask you one question here, and I will ask Monica about this as well when we have her on. Bernie Sanders held the town hall announcing his entree into the presidential race. What are your feelings on that?
I'll be perfectly transparent, perfectly honest with you, Bernie. If you're listening
to
this,
Brody,
Senator,
be.
Please go away.
Brody, be vague like you normally are. What are you talking about?
Please go away. Please go away. I mean, I honestly, you know, there's been discussions that Vice President Biden may run and do an announcement shortly. The Democratic field is already extremely, you know, crowded. Sanders is not a Democrat. I don't care how many times he says he is. He's not. And I think that at the end of the day, you know, somebody who is 79 years old has no business running for the Oval Office, period. It's that simple. You know, if he was 69, that's still questionable.
Okay. I'm going to disagree with you on those points, but I have more concerns with him for some of his positioning than I do his age.
I'm not being an ageist in terms of being an ageist, Rob. Look, I've been in that White House as a reporter. I have seen presidents literally age. I have interviewed them. That is not the type of position, I don't care how cantankerous you are, that you put someone into, okay, to carry out a term of office. I'm sorry. On top of the fact that Sanders is not going to carry the independent voters that we're going to need to write things as far as what's going on right now in politics. And I realize this is a wholly unpopular position I'm taking, but I quite frankly don't care. I think the time has come where the Democratic Party and the American people revisit putting younger politicians in office with new ideas, fresh ideas, and a different approach. They did it in the late 20th century in 1960 when they elected Kennedy. Okay? There's absolutely no reason that they can't use that, okay, as kind of a benchmark for doing it again. That's all.
Okay. Well, There's still points about that where I mean I agree with you philosophically on his electability, and I actually have more concerns on his cultural stance, including his LGBTQ creds, which I don't find as solid. But I'm not as tied into the identity because of age thing I'm just not. So we're going to just disagree on that for the time being, and we'll see how it plays out.
Sounds good.
We have to have something we disagree on, Brody. You know, it's like we'd be boring otherwise. So with that, I do want to welcome to the show Monica Roberts and our renowned editor and founder of Trans G Riot. Monica, welcome. We're pleased to have you.
Yeah, and it's Trans Brio, by the way. Brio.
Oh, Trans Brio. Oh.
Yeah,
I like the riot part.
No, but it's actually Brio. Yeah, it's actually pronounced Brio. Yeah, which is a Grio is basically in West African cultures, oral historians who are able to tell their people up to five centuries of their people's history. So that's why I named the blog after that, because I come from a family of historians. So, and yeah, it was rather cool. So,
that's totally cool. I am still going to think of you as creating a riot just because, but
I definitely live up to the words of my hero, Representative John Lewis, in making good trouble from time to time. So, matter of fact, I just came back from Austin just 48 hours ago. To do a press conference with Equality Texas. So, our legislative session is going on here in Texas, and we've got some good bills LGBTQ-wise and a couple of those bad bills trying to push that religious freedom crap. So,
tell us more about the bad bills. What's going on there?
In a nutshell, that's it. Instead of blatantly trying to pass anti-trans and anti-LGBT discrimination, like they did with when they tried to run SB6 through a regular and a special session and failed, they're trying to do it under the radar, under the guise of religious freedom. So fortunately, both of them, all those bills are in committee at this point. So they have yet to hit the House or Senate floor, so
What areas? Are they just simply that people get to discriminate under the guise of religious freedom, or is there something more specific?
They get to basically discriminate in different areas under the guise of their religious beliefs. Blah blah.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And some of those have become so blatant recently that they're not even under the guise of religious belief. There have been a couple that have been passed that have been specifically that they're allowed to do it under Christian belief, which is, is even more offensive to any kind of constitutional ideology.
However, my argument with that is, okay, if you're going to claim that you can discriminate under your Christian beliefs, okay, that opens the door for Muslims to deny you entry into their business because your wife is not wearing a hijab. Opens the door to a Christian, progressive Christian to deny somebody wearing a MAGA hat entry to their business because, okay, you are in violation of my beliefs. They're opening up a seriously slippery slope if they try to go there. And to me, all this is, is just you're trying to reenact Jim Crow segregation. You're trying to reenact Jim Crow segregation, but trying to basically hide under the guy, you're trying to hide behind the Bible to do it. And
yeah,
I have a problem with that.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we all do. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
So Monica, I wanted to focus you on Washington and what's going on there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure you heard the discussion that Brody and I were having about these hearings now on the transgender ban in the military. Your thoughts on that?
It's ridiculous, and it's basically a rehash of every argument that they made to try to justify don't ask, don't tell, but substitute lesbian and gay, trans for lesbian and gay. And I'll take it even further than that. It's same arguments that they tried to use, that conservatives tried to use to keep black people out of the military, to try to keep women out of combat. And it's the same arguments that they recycle every time that they have a group that they don't like. And now it's just, trans folks that are in their crosshairs.
Right. And with this, first of all, the complete injustice to people who are stepping up mm-hmm. to defend our country, who are really looking to be as selfless and as giving and as brave and as admirable and as heroic
to continue military traditions in their families. Sometimes it's that simple.
Correct.
You're wanting
absolutely.
To continue a tradition of military service in your family. There are a lot of reasons why people go into the military. So why shouldn't trans folks be able to do that, what any other American can do? Well, the reason they don't want to is because it's part of the right-wing agenda to basically eviscerate trans people from public life. And the way you other people is, okay, first step in the plan, you don't allow them to serve in the military. The second step in the plan, you demonize them at every opportunity. You make them less than. It's a playbook that has been used by the right wing for centuries. And it is just, now they're retooling it. They're retooling the same old bull crap that we know doesn't work. To basically attack trans folks because they are pissed off that they lost on marriage equality. And so the conservative movement has always needed an enemy to organize around, whether it was godless communism in the 50s, it was the pushback against the civil rights movement in the late 50s, early 60s, busing, the Equal Rights Amendment, the gay community, women in the military. All right, now we're just the latest group that our right-wing friends are trying to demonize and organize their troops around. And just as they failed with all those other groups, they're going to fail with the trans community.
If we have anything to say about it, they absolutely are going to go down in flames on this. Meanwhile, while all this rhetoric is being played out on the public forum, what do you feel the effect of this is on young people, young transgender people, of color? What is the blowback of just this attack itself?
Yeah, it's, the rhetoric is based, when you're trying to say that you're not good enough to even serve in the military, but you'll let a white supremacist in with no problem, what does that say to a trans kid? And especially when you're also combining that with attacks on, on civil rights. You're rolling back all the progress that we made under the Obama administration. The progress that we have painstakingly made since Stonewall. But you're doing this basically just, one, to be spiteful, and other, because you need to win in the culture war. You know, and yeah, it's as a, and you've also set it up for trans. You know, you're also attacking trans kids. You know, let's not forget that the Department of Education refuses to take any complaints from trans kids about discrimination that happens in school settings.
Right.
Or, you know, and let's not forget you had a spate of you've had the bathroom, you know, bill attacks that came out. You also have the turf going wild, not only in Britain, you know, with the assistance of the media in Britain, but, you know, they're starting their crap here again.
Can you speak a little bit more? Yeah, can you speak a little bit more about how the media is helping the turfs in Britain? What's going on there?
Piers Morgan runs the Daily Mail, or as we call it, the Daily Fail. And
right.
British media has increasingly put turfs on as experts and not, you know, and deliberately excluded trans folks from those discussions. You know, they have been caught literally putting, you know, misinformation out there and then turning around and apologizing for it later, but the damage is done when you put the original bad story out there and then let it hang and don't correct it. You know, say I'm sorry about a week or so later, you know, after the story's been out there, is a problem.
Right.
These turfs are also, you know, embedded in academia. You know, Jermaine Greer, for example. You know,
right.
The longest time, you know, has been one of those people who was in academia. We had them embedded in the LGBT movement in the early 80s and stuff.
One of the challenges they had at London Pride was I appreciate it only from the standpoint that they panicked and they didn't know what to do and they made a very poor decision, but they actually allowed a group of the turfs to go before, in their minds they were letting them just kind of go before the parade, but it actually made it look like they were leading the London Pride parade. What was your reaction to that?
It was not only a mistake, it was ridiculous. And one of the other things that's ridiculous to me, you know, bringing it back onto this side of the pond, the Southern Poverty Law Center, which determines what groups are hate groups, refuses to declare the TERFs as a hate group. But you've got the men's rights advocates, the MRA, declared as a hate group. You've got other, you know, you've gone as far as declaring, I'll have to double check that, but I think Farrakhan is also considered part, you know, that. But
yes,
we have repeatedly asked you to, you know, say as a community to declare the TERFs as a hate group. And these are people who have basically doxed kids. They are now colluding with the Republican Party and also the Southern Baptist Convention to openly oppress trans folks. When SB6 was up, when we were debating SB6 during the 2017 session, we actually had a TERF that was called as an expert witness.
Yeah, no, that's I'm actually sitting here shocked. I had no idea that had happened. Brody, you have kind of close to Southern Poverty Law Center. What is up with that? Why would they not be involved in that?
I've had discussions with several members of the Southern Poverty Law Center's executive group. And I've indicated to them that, you know, their hesitancy to declare a hate group is mislined because the vast majority of the TERFs, sadly enough, are lesbian. And so what you end mm-hmm. up having is a situation whereby these trans exclusionary radical feminists also happen to be part of the LGBTI acronym. That literally presents the Southern Poverty Law Center with a conundrum. So that's one of the reasons that they have been reluctant to. Now, that doesn't mean that they are necessarily discounting the fact that this is something they need to address. I think they're working on it. It's just, it's very, very convoluted and it's very complex. As Monica and I discovered last week when she received a brilliant write-up profile by our colleagues at Daily Beast magazine, and within 4 hours, you know, Transgrediant was taken down, literally. The blog was removed, not just blocked, removed. And what had happened,
right.
we discovered later in conversations with executives and sources at Google who run the Blogger platform, it was a combination of flagging going on by IP addresses that would center around where we know TERFs are, you know, more or less hived, and then some bot action. And, you know, the timing was critical insofar as Monica's profile on one platform, the blog comes down. It took us about almost 8 hours to restore the blog. And then we had the problem virtually the next day it happened again. We managed to get the blog up in about 10 minutes that time. But we've made it very abundantly clear to the people at Google that, you know, they need to actually set aside certain blogs and do this. I should note, ironically, we came across a similar circumstance on YouTube, only this time the person that was banned and blocked is a retired Navy SEAL, Senior Chief Don Shipley, who I happen mm-hmm. to know. And he runs a website on YouTube, and he takes down people who impersonate SEALs and basically stolen valor, and YouTube nailed him. So we're in a process now of fighting to get Don back up and running. So there's two different ends to
Brody,
the spectrum.
Brody, before you go on, though, could you clarify a little bit more on how both Transgriot and the YouTube site were taken down? You went through that kind of quickly, and I didn't quite capture how that was accomplished.
Yeah. Well, according to the smart fellas, and these are the you know, the IT experts, what happens, and we'll take Monica for the sample. Bloggers got a very low threshold for reporting. So if someone takes offense or makes up offense, basically, and they flag the blog or they flag a certain article on the blog, there is a scoring system that the artificial intelligence runs. It's all done by AI. There's no human involved at this point. Once it gets to a certain threshold, which we discovered a blogger was between 20 and 25 negative reports, which is awfully low, okay?
Yeah.
The scoring kicks it into a different AI, and then at that point, the way Blogger is set up, they remove the blog. So they don't just take the offending post. Because of the construction of the platform, they take the whole blog down. Now, on Senior Chief Shipley's YouTube site, it's the same formula. So many. But here's the kicker. Both the Senior Chief and Monica are victims of what we call bot swarms. And the bot swarms are actually triggered by the humans doing the reporting, complaining, and the flagging. And there is a form of AI, if you will, involved with that. And when these bot swarms are turned loose, then they just start doing multiple and multiple and multiple complaints, which wasn't the case necessarily so much with Monica as it was with Senior Chief Don Shipley. So, and again, these are two people that are so completely at the end of the political spectrum as to not be funny. Don and his wife, extremely conservative, retired Navy SEAL. Monica, journalist and award-winning member of the LGBTQI community. So there's no middle ground here, but it's the same problem. Okay, it's the exact mm-hmm. same problem. And I see it as injustice. I happen to know the Senior Chief and his wife. I've dealt with them. They've always treated me with very much courtesy and respect. Honestly, the Chief and I could never sit down and have a beer together because we just do not agree anything politically. But what he did mm-hmm. for his country, his son's a Navy SEAL, his wife was a Navy person, what they do for the wounded warriors. I support that. This is injustice. But there's a larger picture here, Rob. Monica is an emblem of what we're really talking about when it comes down to the LGBTQI community, particularly the trans community, because now we're discovering what happened to Senior Chief Shipley on YouTube, which we have known for over 3 years has been a problem on YouTube with LGBTQI content. Remember, we had Matt
Diamond
Shasky on, the shirtless violinist came on. Remember that, Rob? So,
right. Oh, of course.
What happens here? Okay, well, it's the same thing. So,
and Diamond Styles, who was my counterpart YouTube, had 10 years of her work taken down on YouTube last year.
Exactly. So this is, and again, this is driven to go to Monica's earlier point. Okay, the right has to have a boogeyman. Okay, and in the case of Senior Chief Shipley, okay, it was the far left have to have a boogeyman. And I'll tell you the reason Shipley got taken down was because, like he does with other people with stolen valor, he exposed the fact that Nathan Phillips had fraudulently claimed military service and awards and units that he wasn't actually, you know, he was lying, basically. It was stolen valor.
Yeah.
And so that, of course, you know, set off all the people. And it came in the heat of the Covington kids and all the nonsense that went on. So the far left got pissed at Shipley for doing what he does anyway, and that's calling out. You know, I respect what Elder Phillips did, but I don't respect the fact he lied about his military service. That is a non-starter with me. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Just like
what
happened to Monica, okay, is completely a non-starter with me for the same reason. And the thing of it is, as we saw from the Cohen hearing yesterday, and I'm going to bring this all together now, what we saw from the Cohen hearing yesterday is that the President of the United States and his Republican enablers, I'm not going to call them allies, I'm going to say enablers because that's what they really are at the end of the day, okay?
Mm-hmm.
People like Representative Jordan, okay, who let sexual abuse happen on his watch while he was a coach wrestling at Ohio University, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He was the attack, he was the head of the attack pack yesterday in the Cohen hearing. Okay, people like the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, these are enablers, and they have allowed, okay, a racist, con artist, liar to incite a significant portion of the minority of the American population, namely white supremacists and Christian evangelicals, okay, and it has turned out that it is targeting fellow citizens, and in this case, for our community, they're going after our most vulnerable, our trans kids of color.
Mm-hmm.
No,
Monica?
Yes, absolutely. Well, actually, before Monica, there's also a bigger problem, and I'm going to ask Monica to comment on this as well. But it's, you know, what you just described in terms of the, and I won't even call it artificial intelligence because it's really not that. It's about algorithms that happen with YouTube and the blogs and all that that are set up poorly to try to manage an enormous population of people because YouTube, the blog platforms, Facebook, all that, you know, we're talking about millions and millions of participants, and they're trying to manage that with mere thousands of employees, human employees.
Yeah.
So that's why those algorithms are in place. But there is a bigger, more insidious, systematic racism, phobia, transphobia issue that is at the level of artificial intelligence, because that artificial intelligence has been developed not necessarily by white men, but definitely 99% male, probably Asian and white, and a lot of that in terms of facial recognition and a lot of the artificial intelligence mathematics,
cultural bias,
and everything they're going through.
Cultural bias.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Cultural and just gender bias. And
that
is that intelligence is going to hit in many different ways that I think once these things start coming out are going to be shocking because there won't be an immediate boogeyman to point to. And I can't even imagine what they will do culturally in terms of gender, because, you know, it's like they already have failed in being unable to identify African-American women and their algorithms and their quote-unquote intelligence, or it's actually lack of intelligence, have identified a lot of those individuals as being male. I mean, that's where they are mistakenly programmed. And Monica, this is my question to you.
Mm-hmm.
Who is advocating, who is fighting that kind of level on behalf of transgender and people of color communities?
Well, for the most part, we have had this issue just, you know, as we've had in the LNG end of the community. We've had a lack of understanding about the issues that trans people of color face. Ever since Christine Jorgensen stepped off the plane in 1953, we have had discussions on the trans feminine end from a predominantly white perspective. That's also true of the trans masculine specter. One of the reasons I founded the blog in 06 was because, you know, too many of those discussions didn't include the viewpoints and, let's say, from of persons of color. Because a transition for me and, you know, and other black trans folks is different from my white counterparts. And then you can say, we can take that still further. It's also different than issues that a trans Latina faces. And then, you know, break it down still further in trans Latina world, it depends on whether you're an immigrant or not.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, so there's a lot of nuance in these arguments that's missed. But I also, you know, noticed that, you know, when I founded TransGriot, is that we talk, you know, when we start talking about trans issues internationally, we always talk about Europe. We always talk about Asia. Africa is the second largest continent on the planet. Trans folks are there, but you wouldn't know that based when we start talking internationally.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't know that, you know, that there are trans folks in the Caribbean or on the African continent. And they have conferences. They have organizations down there, and they are also fighting. As I said, they are also fighting for their rights, like in Uganda as well. I say trans folks were affected when Scott Lively did his "Kill the Gays" crap in Uganda, stirring up crap there, and also, you know, also stirring it up in Nigeria as well, to where a good girlfriend of mine who is from Nigeria had to move to London, you know, to get out of Nigeria because she actually did jail time
right.
for transitioning. You know, so.
Yeah, I have a very good friend who is in Nigeria, and I think the reason she is still able to be there is she's quote unquote passable. And
mm-hmm.
she basically lives her life visibly there as a woman. And I worry that she would be discovered that she is actually transgender. But your point is very well taken that the identity
and the nanosecond,
and
the
ability
nanosecond
to
well, that
she
gets.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Sorry.
And I said the nanosecond that her.
Oh,
go ahead,
God.
Brody.
Sorry, Monica. Well,
mm-hmm.
no, it's just it's that. It's what Monica was referring to, but it is the one thing that has disturbed me that is a legacy left over, and this is one of the things that really just gets me going, and that is the tendency of the American evangelical, Pentecostal, and even into some of the other denominations, such as the Methodist, which we just saw that nonsense take place.
Mm-hmm.
They erase the culture and the existence and the vibrancy, okay, of, you know, African cultures and the African people. And by no, you know, this is not recent. I mean, you know, if you look at the history of your country, Rob, these people or their ancestors, if you use that term, in addition to slavery, in addition to erasure of a rich, vibrant culture, and keep in mind that, you know, this is something that most Americans don't get, you know, Africa is just not one big, huge, whole, happy family. You've got tribes and dialects and languages and cultures
66 countries
throughout the entire.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay.
66
but while they were
countries,
erasing
yeah.
that during the time period of slavery, was they were committing acts of genocide against Native Americans and the Aboriginal nations and erasure of their culture. There is a serious problem with these people. Monica's right. It's more than the boogeyman. They have the peculiarity of whatever the nonsense is they believe that turns into Christian supremacy. At the end of the day, there's no other label that fits better than that, or Christofascism if it's a bad day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's culture erasure. It is people erasure. Okay. And at the end of the day, it is pure, unabridged, uneducated, ignorant evil. And with that, Monica, I'll throw it back to you for the nanosec.
Yeah, and I'm going to basically piggyback on that too. And it's because of a little thing called Project 21 back in the 90s, early 90s, that Ralph Reed and the Christian Coalition were trying to put together when they were trying to build their own little cadre of sellout black ministers that would toe the GOP line on stuff. We have seen in the black, say, community, what they call prosperity gospel popping up. And I don't know if you remember Reverend Ike back in the day, where
oh God,
you know,
yeah,
okay,
oh, yeah.
The pastors now make are Reverend Ike on steroids at this point, and you know the Creflo Dollars and all these folks of the world. All right. One of the other things that, you know, one of the things that I despised about Eddie Long, you know, say before he passed on, I say, and we found out about his hypocrisy and his midnight masses for men, was he was basically, he and another, and a group of those ministers were basically colluding with the Republican Party. You know, say we had a group of them here in Houston when we were fighting to keep, you know, when they fought us tooth and nail, alongside longtime haters like Stephen Hotze and Dave Welch and Dave Wilson, to, you know, keep us from passing HERO, which we did anyway, and then we got it repealed, no thanks to the Texas Supreme Court. But, you know, but they have been basically injected. They have injected discord into the black church to the point where one of the talking points that they tried to use, you know, to justify it is first, you know, the gays tried to hijack our civil rights movement, blah 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 mm-hmm. blah. And then when we point out that the, you know, that the March on Washington wouldn't happen without a gay man by the name of Bayard Rustin, and
right.
many of the folks
right.
in the Freedom Riots wouldn't have gotten bailed out without Lorraine Hansberry's help doing the fundraising. Then they shifted tactics, and they started using the bathroom crap. But, you know, the reality is, if you know, say, if these Republicans were really serious about wanting to keep women and children safe in bathrooms, they would ban Republican politicians, priests, and pastors from going to the bathrooms.
Right. I don't disagree with that. I actually wholeheartedly
mm-hmm.
agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I would definitely support a bill like that. But, but yeah, it's just, you know, it's part, it's a, you know, but, you know, circling back to what we started talking about early in the hour, it is just since 2015 and the loss in the Obergefell case, they have been hell-bent on attacking the trans community. But what they failed to factor into this are two things. When you have a group of people like trans folks who have to fight tooth and nail just to be who they are, we're not scared of Republicans. We're going to fight you just as hard to keep you from demonizing us. And then when you started picking on the kids, people don't like it when you attack kids. So you basically swung a lot of people who were on the fence about whether to support the trans community or not onto our side when you started attacking, when you started attacking the Jazz Jenningses and the Kai Shapleys and the other, you know, and the, you know, and the Trinity Neals of the world and their parents. Yeah. That's a problem.
Right.
And you've basically, yeah, you basically pulled a lot of people who would have been on the fence when you made the mistake of attacking trans kids onto our side. And then, you know, just the base, you know, and then the fact that we've, you know, with shows like Pose and, you know, with the increased visibility that trans people have in the media, you know, the more positive ends of it, you know, regardless, you know, so
right.
of what's happening on the other side of the pond, you know, the balance of it has been overwhelmingly positive. The fact that you have, you know, folks in the military serving with honor and distinction, like Lieutenant Drennan and Logan Ireland and countless other folks in the military. And then, you know, even Kristen Beck was a member of SEAL Team 6, you know, before she transitioned. So,
yep.
And,
yep.
And so, you know, go ahead.
Yeah, Monica, you mentioned it. No, Brody, I got a question. Monica,
okay,
you mentioned
right.
this, and I was actually going to ask you about it before, and you brought it up on your own. The show Pose, there was
mm-hmm.
an article out recently that I think the top episode on all of television, this article called out one of the episodes of Pose, written by Janet Mock, directed by Janet Mock. How do you feel? Is that show getting enough visibility? Are enough people aware of it? I mean, it is absolutely breathtaking and incredible. It's a wonderful piece of work. Is it getting the recognition it should be?
Probably after this season two, it will be. They're actually, I know for season two, they're supposed to move it up about 3 years because it has been set like in the late 80s for this first season. And interestingly enough, there was a parallel storyline in which Stan, one of the characters, works at the Trump Organization.
Right.
Yeah, and was, you know, and was dating one of the members of the House of Evangelista.
Right.
And but there have been some of those episodes where I literally was crying at the end of them. Because it hit, you know, because the writing was so on point in large part because you had people like Janet and Our Lady J writing the story. You know, having people who represent our community not only playing us, but actually writing the stories matters. You know,
it was wonderful on all levels, and the love story you're talking about was
mm-hmm.
probably one of the most poignant parts of that show. I mean, it was so authentic and real. You know,
the Stan and Angel, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it is something that for me, I'm hoping people do take more recognition on.
Mm-hmm.
What would you think about some of the women who are on that show who are transgender? For several of them, I could easily see them going after cisgender roles. What do you feel about that?
I actually think MJ Rodriguez should have gotten nominated this year.
for an Emmy. But Billy Porter was the only one that got a nomination. But because there's one of my favorite episodes that involves MJ was when her mother died. And she goes back, and she had a contentious relationship with her brother and her sister.
Right.
And she still shows up at the funeral, you know, with Pray Tell and her house children in tow. And, of course, you know, some of the relatives have been told that she was dead. But here she is right there. And then when somebody made a derogatory comment about her, you know, Pray Tell turned around and basically read the person and basically told him, it doesn't cost you anything to be kind.
Right. It was such a nuanced portrayal and storyline, and really incredible. We are running out of time here, and you have been incredible on the show, Monica, and my deep gratitude that you've joined us tonight. Brody, I think you had another question.
No, Monica pretty much covers it for me. I mean, in full transparency to our listeners, Monica and I have known each other for a minute. I think the world of her. She's a brilliant journalist. She's an advocate and fierce advocate of not only the trans community, but the rest of the acronym. And I highly, highly recommend that you guys go and check out her blog, see her writing, and get a chance to know her. I'll let her give the blog's address. But I'm going to end with that, Rob. So, Monica, how do people find
Transgriot.blogspot.com. And, yeah, I'll be talking about the 2020 campaign and who I like to become the Democratic nominee for president, and it ain't Sanders.
Okay. Do you want to give us a hint? That's quite a tease.
Yeah. Let's just say it's not Sanders, and it's not Cory Booker.
Okay.
Yeah, because
and then
I'm also going to lay out the case why Bernie Sanders will not win the 2020 nomination.
Well, I can't wait to read that, and I have a feeling we'll probably be yanking you on here again if you're willing to come on to talk about that. Those were two amazing teasers.
Yeah. Oh, sure. Yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that, and thanks for the invitation to be on tonight. So.
You're welcome. And thank you for coming on tonight, Brody. I want to thank you as always. I also want to thank our listeners for tuning in. Also, don't forget to listen to Out in Santa Cruz. That is heard on Saturday nights on www.ksco.com, 7 p.m. Pacific Time, 10 p.m. Eastern Time. For Brody and myself, I want to thank you for tuning in to Rated LGBT Radio. We will be here next week talking to you about more interesting, fascinating, deep subjects, and we hope you join us then.
You've been listening to Rated LGBT Radio!